You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Times Higher Education podcast. I'm Sarah Custer, and joining me today is Duncan Ross, THE's Chief Data Officer, Phil Beatty, THE's Chief Knowledge Officer, and Tim Swoola, Head of Content and Engagement for the THE World Summit Series. Now, on April 3rd, we're going to reveal the results of a new project that THE has been working on for a number of years that attempts to measure universities' social and economic impact. I'm just wondering if we could start by talking a little bit about how timing plays into this. And Phil, I'm going to start with you. Why is now the time that we're unveiling this after we've been in the rankings business for 20 years?
Well, 15 years since the first world ranking was published, but yeah, we've been looking at data for a lot longer than that. I think the main reason actually is we have fantastic expertise. Duncan will obviously talk in a moment about the actual methodology here. But yeah, we've been doing the World University Ranking since 2004. Very popular, sort of holistic view. It looks at teaching research and has a hint of what we could describe as the third mission for universities, knowledge transfer and their impact. And we've always been very conscious that impact was hard to measure, but a vital area of university performance, but an underappreciated area. And of course, it's been much higher on governments' agendas across the world. You know, universities are under pressure to say, what are you doing for the money we spend? Mm-hmm. And of course, there are fantastic scientific discoveries that, you know, win Nobel Prizes and change the world, but there are, you know, countless numbers of everyday activities that make the world a better place, that contribute to social good, that are underappreciated, you know, whether that's from getting graduates into jobs or supporting local SMEs through consultancy, whether it's civic engagement, voluntary work, whether it's, you know, spin-outs and business parks and economic contributions. There's a huge range of activity. So we've been under a lot of pressure over the years to say, look, we want to recognize a wider range of university activities, a broader range of university missions, not just the elite prestigious research universities. All universities are doing great things that make the world a better place. How do we capture it? And also the pressure from government, proving it, evidencing it. So for some years, we were looking at what we narrowly define as economic impact, you know, licenses, patents, industry, university co-authored papers. But actually, since Duncan and his team have been growing, we've been investing in data over the years, and we've really been able to change the game and look at impact in a much wider format, which is probably a good time to hand over to you, Duncan, to say what we're actually doing and how we're managing to do it.
Yeah, how are we managing to measure impact?
Well, that's it's a great question. And as Phil said, you know, we've been interested in this area of impact for a long time, but when we started exploring it, initially from this perspective of being about economic impact, it rapidly became clear that that was quite a narrow definition, not a bad definition, but a narrow one. And that particularly as we move into the 21st century, there's more and more focus of the need of universities to play their role in broader civic society. And so we started looking for ways we could reflect that, and it quickly became evident that the most widely accepted, the most widely embraced framework for this was the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. They're interesting because they produce a broad range of different ways in which society can participate towards developing the world in a sustainable way. So we really tried to see, you know, what could we gather? What information could we collect around that which would reflect on the role that the HE sector particularly has to play in driving towards those goals? So that's what we started to do. We have a theory of change that sits behind this. So the theory of change says we are looking at three aspects of how universities can drive towards the SDGs. The first one is looking at research. So clearly, you know, if you're doing research on climate change, for example, that addresses directly the SDGs. The second aspect is stewardship. So how good are universities at looking after the resources they have? You know, do they act responsibly? Do they act sustainably in all of themselves? And then the third aspect is what I would describe as outreach. Do universities go beyond the ivory towers that we sometimes think of them as and actually reach out into their community, into their region, into their nation to support the wider societal goal of moving towards the SDGs?
So there are 17 SDGs. Are we going to be looking at all of them?
Eventually, yes, but in the first year we're looking at 11 SDGs, including 17, which is the SDG of working together towards the goals. We decided on those after consultation with universities. We did some work around the Young University Summit last year, where we asked participants about which SDGs they thought were most important to their institutions. And to be honest, the, part of the challenge was, you know, despite the great support we've had from the sector, from our partners in this area, you know, we have a certain capacity in the first year, and universities themselves have a capacity in terms of preparing what is often a relatively new data set for them. I mean, the interesting thing is that this data is almost always available in universities, but not always to the senior leadership teams.
So can you expand on that a little bit more? I mean, I'm just wondering how can you measure how a university is helping promote a decent workforce?
So the way we've designed this is to very much try and encourage a situation where universities that are not from the global north have an equal chance of participating and performing well, and also where we can reflect the fact that different parts of the world and different universities will have very different priorities in terms of the SDGs they want to tackle. So yes, if you look at promoting, how we would look at seeing if a university promotes decent work. So there are measures we can look at which are, you know, research measures, what research are they doing in that area. But we can also look at things such as, you know, do they have a policy on aspects of exploitation in the workforce? Does the university actively have a policy that prohibits the use of modern slavery? Now, we would expect most universities to be able to do that, but you know, it's not always obvious that that's evidenced. Another great example in that area is something that's been a major issue around in academia for the last several years, Phil, which is the casualisation of the academic workforce. So we've asked, you know, what proportion of your employees are on contracts of less than 24 months. And we think that's going to give some really interesting insight both into how universities are progressing towards the SDGs, but actually the broader position of the labour force in universities overall.
I chose decent workforce just because that was the first one that came to my mind. But the example that you gave is very much contained within the university community. So can you give me another example of how you're going to be measuring how universities are really making an impact on the wider society?
Yeah, so the way that universities can make an impact on the wider society, as I said, obviously there's a research element, but if we focus on what I would describe as outreach, sometimes it's about the preparation of the workforce. So if you look at SDG 3, which is about health and well-being, one of the questions we're asking is the proportion of graduates who are leaving with degrees that are associated with healthcare. Now, it may not be, you know, that they are ready to practice, but is the university supporting their society by providing skilled graduates who are going to go into that workforce? Another example in health would be looking at, you know, is your university actually doing outreach clinics with your local community? Are they taking that expertise and actually delivering on health? So, and then there are the internal aspects. You know, do you provide health advice, free health support for your staff and your students? Now, inevitably, the importance of that varies from country to country. But we hope that by producing a range of different areas where universities can submit data, that universities can focus on the ones that are most immediately relevant to them in their location.
Which is another point that, Phil, I'll throw to you. Is there a risk that this is perpetuating the idea that rankings only favour universities in wealthy countries?
No, I think this is why this one's so exciting, actually, because, you know, we accept the World University Rankings have a heavy focus on globally impactful research, so it does tend to favour those big-name, well-resourced universities that can pay the salaries to have the star professors producing the you know, world-changing research, have the laboratories, facilities, the huge endowments. There is an element there where it's a, you know, a ranking that does favour wealth, wealthy nations, wealthy institutions. There's no getting away from that. I think it's part of the reality of the world we live in. This one, I think, is very different because it's looking at universities against their own mission. It's not saying, right, let's take an ideal of Harvard or Stanford and compare everybody to that in terms of what they're achieving, what they're contributing. It's saying, let's look at you against your own mission. So if you are in, you know, sub-Saharan Africa and you don't have the resources to compete with Harvard and Stanford for top professors and paying big salaries and having the most cutting-edge research facilities, we could recognize your contribution to the local community through a whole range of activities, recognize your contributions through your graduates, through local outreach. And we can also find the pockets of research you're doing. So there may be some outstanding research being done in highly relevant national areas. You know, climate change was a case in point, or disease. And there may be some great research projects that are much more narrowly focused, but are making a great contribution. So for me, this is fantastically exciting that we're leveling the playing field. It's open. With the world rankings, we say you have to be a research university, you have to publish 1,000 papers over 5 years to be included. This opens it up to any institution of higher education, really.
Pretty much, we're looking for universities that teach at an undergraduate level and that are nationally certified. And that's really the criteria we're basing this on.
And I think, Duncan, your innovation, which is allowing institutions to sort of select the areas that they go in for. So we won't judge every institution across all 11 of the SDGs. There'll be some, you know, which are resource intensive, and others that are less so. And actually, you can judge people against their own stated contributions.
And I'm going to be personally, I'm going to be really interested to see how the SDGs that universities are working on vary across the world.
Mm.
You know, where are the areas where people are prioritizing health over equality? Where are the areas where they're looking at, you know, economic growth versus climate change, for example? This is the kind of thing that this is going to start surfacing for the first time, and I hope this data is going to be useful not just for the sector directly, but actually on a much broader basis as well.
Mm.
And just to throw in, sorry, one final point on that, that we have seen submissions from both the traditional elite institutions, you know, Russell Group in the UK, AAU members in America, the top name, big AAU. Global powers.
Mm-hmm.
But we've also seen some less celebrated, less prestigious institutions joining as well. So it's wonderful to see that diversity has been reflected in the initial data submission. More than 500 universities have submitted.
That was going to be my question. How many people are participating?
We've had 550 universities who submitted data to us, and where we have enough data to generate results. We are currently going through data validation, which is an interesting exercise for us because in most of our other rankings, the kind of data we're looking for is numeric data. So how many graduates do you have? You know, how much money do you spend on X, Y, and Z? And for that, of course, we evaluate that data. We compare it with historical data. We compare it with external sources. But in this ranking, for the first time, we've asked for evidence of activities. So we've had universities submitting, for example, we say, do you have a scheme for the mentorship of women? And we've asked for evidence on that. So we've actually got a team of people now going through that evidence, evaluated, looking at it, saying, well, they've supplied this data, they've supplied this this web page. Is that actually evidence for the question we've asked? And we've got a team going through that at the moment, and it's exciting.
That sounds like a bit more of a subjective way of looking at data.
It is, but inevitably, when you look at impact, there is some aspect of subjectivity there. Now, we're being reasonably open about this in the sense that we don't believe that it is appropriate or necessary that we have the expertise to always evaluate whether the mentoring scheme is a great mentoring scheme or whether it's only an adequate mentoring scheme. But we're looking for intention on the part of the institution here. And ideally, we're looking for intention that ties directly to the SDG. So in many cases, we will be asking for evidence that they are doing something in line with SDG number 4, for example. And we would ideally like them to say, yes, this is in the dot evidence, SDG 4 is served by this. So we're evaluating at that stage. I think the most positive thing about it from our team's perspective is the high quality of what's being done there. You know, we often overlook the work that universities are doing when it's not the, you know, the high level, the Nobel Prize winning stuff that gets publicized. But there is a vast amount of really brilliant work that universities are doing around the world in these areas that they deserve to get recognised for.
So we'll be seeing the full results of that at the Innovation and Impact Summit that is going to be hosted at KAIST, Tim, that you've been involved with organising and putting together. So I'm just wondering if you could just give us an idea, apart from launching the rankings, which will happen on April 3rd, and then a further explanation of it on April 4th. Tim, how are the impact rankings really coming into the sessions at the summit, and which ones are going to be touching on the responsibility that universities have to act on things like gender pay gaps, healthcare, climate change?
So the summit's taking place over 3 days. So we work on the program in collaboration very much with KAIST, so it partly reflects what President Shin is most interested in, his colleagues there at KAIST, and equally it continues some of the discussions that we have at previous summits, because every summit in a sense is a continuation. It's more of a sort of holistic global dialogue rather than a series of one-off isolated events. So I think in some respects the discussions that we're having are continuations. What's new at this summit in particular is, as Duncan's just explained, we will for the first time be able to have this global picture of perhaps where some of these clusters of activities are in relation to particular parts of impact, so we can be able to see and then debate and discuss and dissect, where there are certain, areas that are really focusing on healthcare, for example, or focusing on, the environment and the natural world, or focusing on, economic justice and those kinds of issues. So that's what will make this summit completely unique in terms of all the global portfolio of our events or any other ones, actually. Mm. In terms of two of the sessions that are going to, I think, really pick apart some of these findings from the rankings, we've got one big panel discussion that is going to sort of reflect about university research and its relationship with private industry, and whether universities are able to sort of say that they have a socially neutral impact in their research, or whether by working, on applied research with industry, that automatically means that it's going to have, some kind of positive or negative effect, one way or the other on a society, either as the people, the consumers or the producers, and whether that might have a really positive impact in a distant country where, the consumers are, but have an awful effect on the people who are working to produce it, or mining the resources, that kind of topic. And then the second discussion, which actually will close the summit, will be sort of looking at the evolution of the sort of understanding of this triple helix model of collaboration between university, government and industry. And particularly, we've got voices representing sort of industry and universities there. And I suppose asking about, whether innovation, because the whole summit is looking at, the sort of fourth industrial revolution. So it's that kind of innovation, the very sort of cutting edge. Is it taking place now too fast for national governments or agencies to really understand it, for legislators to, who may not clearly have a scientific background, for example, to be able to really understand what's been produced in labs, in factories, and is that a problem? In a kind of hyper-connected world, even, can national governments, is it even applicable for them to try and legislate to sort of measure the impact or regulate, what's coming out of our top universities?
And if sorry, Tim, no. Just something I want to be really clear on as well, that there's 3 days of outstanding content that goes way beyond the rankings and data, but actually the rankings and data will be subjected to quite a heavy amount of scrutiny. And I think it's really important for us to say we're very much in listening mode. We've been really overwhelmed by the enthusiastic response to this initiative. As Duncan said, 550 universities submitting quite complex sets of data, opening themselves up in a way that's unprecedented. It does give us an unprecedented wealth of new information about the sector across the world, and we are really in listening mode as to what we do with it next, where we go. So we will produce individual rankings of performance against the individual sustainable development goals, and we'll be looking at an overall summary. But we're absolutely in consultation mode as to where this goes next. How quickly do we move to the other SDGs? How else can we use this data? There's a lot of interest in this data as a possible political lobbying tool. For university sectors as a whole, for university groupings to use it to demonstrate to their governments in ways that's been impossible in the past, to show the worth of that research, to show the impact they're having. So we want to make the sessions in KAIST in South Korea very, very consultative as to where we go next with this data. We want to hear from the community.
I mean, I'm already working with two other universities in two different continents about, you know, how we sort of follow up this summit and the findings that we have there. So that is already kind of in the mix for the next 12, 18 months or so, although it's a secret as to where they are.
Right. Speaking of secrets, final question. I'm just wondering if, I know that your data elves are busy analyzing all the data that's come in from the 550 universities, Duncan, but I'm just wondering, can you give us any sort of hint about what will be revealed in Korea?
Nothing at this stage about which universities are doing particularly well, but I do think that we are starting to see the shape of some of the responses. So, for example, we know that the most popular SDG to submit data to has been health. Many universities see that as a key one that they can deliver on. One of the ones which is perhaps no surprise is that within Southeast Asia particularly, there is a focus on industry and innovation. So that's SDG 9. And again, that's, you know, this isn't terribly surprising, but it is interesting to see that being confirmed in the data. But the overall, the most impressive thing to me, as I keep saying, is the quality of the responses we're getting and the willingness of universities to submit. There have been some absolutely outstanding sets of evidence coming forward. And also universities participating really for the first time in rankings at all. We've had, and choose just one university by name, because I looked at their submission, the University of Kurdistan is a university that is, you know, it's not in the most straightforward part of the world to be a university, but they have actually submitted data to this, and I think it's a testament to the work that they are doing.
I think that's probably one of the biggest exciting moments here, is that will we produce a ranking for the first time that has some surprise names in it? It's not the usual suspects. We imagine, we don't know until we see the results, but we imagine these universities can show that they're making an impact, albeit in a different way to the likes of, Harvard's or Stanford's, but they're making an impact nevertheless.
Well, this is all very exciting. And Tim, are there still some places left? Can people still sign up and register to come to the Innovation and Impact Summit?
Yes, there will still be some places left at the summit. I think by the time that you are listening to this, so if you haven't already booked your place, then go to our website, which is theworldsummitseries.com. It will be the top summit highlighted there, and look forward to three fantastic days.
And of course, if you want to find more information about our impact rankings, there's oodles of it on timeshighereducation.com, including a blog from Duncan and a webinar from Duncan going into the real nitty-gritty bits of how they're going to go about measuring each 11 SDGs. Thanks very much for joining me, everyone.
Thank you.
I'm Sarah Custer, and if you've got any questions or comments for the podcast, you can get in touch with me, sarah.custer@timeshighereducation.com. We'll see you next time.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.